Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. Now you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview, and we are back. So glad to have you back aboard on the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. So glad to be back. Technical difficulties last week kept us off the air. The technical difficulties being the laws of physics, as I was out of state again, trying to earn enough money to keep the Weekly Worldview studios up and running. Here from the boiler room deep in the bowels of the McBurney compound. And I've got to tell you about a conversation I had. Briefly, before we start with the news, I sat down for lunch. I was at a meeting, sat down for lunch with a group of doctors. And as I sat down, one of the doctors was telling the other about parents' irrational fears regarding the kidnapping or otherwise assault of their children. And how children in America were actually more likely to be struck by lightning than to be kidnapped by a stranger. They were talking about the recent free-range parenting case where the parents have been, I believe they've been charged with some sort of neglect for allowing their children to walk about a mile. A 10-year-old, I think, unaccompanied. And the neighbors freaked out and the cops freaked out and turned the parents in and now they're in trouble. And they look like a couple of hippies anyways. So I'm not going to lend any support to them. But this doctor was telling the other doctor that these fears that people have are irrational. Their children aren't going to be kidnapped. They're not under any more threat than they were 50 years ago or 100 years ago walking home from school. And he made eye contact with me briefly. And I said, you know what I think? I said, I think that the government has become nothing more than a bunch of lawyers making a very comfortable living regulating crime. And that parents are afraid because we've been told that we have to accept and tolerate a certain level of violence and crime and criminals. And I talked a little bit about the catch and release program. And of course, my suggestion for the registration of sex offenders who would commit any crime against a child. If you've listened to the show, you know I have a registration theory that I think would work. They should all be registered in granite down at the cemetery. And then parents wouldn't have irrational fears. And I agreed with the doctor. I said, I think it is irrational. But when you know that criminals like this are allowed to get out of jail and be on the streets, well, parents can't help but be afraid. And if the government would do the right thing and execute anyone who would commit a violent crime against a child, well, then we wouldn't have these irrational fears. But don't blame the parents. The government's the problem. And anyway, the doctor next to me, I could tell she was agreeing with me. We had a good old time talking with this single doctor from San Francisco. He lived in downtown San Francisco, and he said he's never afraid. And I said, well, you may never be afraid, but if you had little kids, you probably would be afraid. And yes, maybe it's irrational, but that's where we're at. And so that's how that went. That was interesting. I am irrationally afraid sometimes, I think, about someone trying to harm my kids, but it's just because I know they're out there. And I blame the proctocracy, the lawyers, making a comfortable living, creating an industry to regulate crime and regulate criminals who should be executed, frankly. But there is some good news on the horizon as it relates to the proctocracy. And for that, we'll open up in Columbia, South Carolina. The South Carolina Personhood Constitutional Amendment has been introduced in the South Carolina Senate. It was introduced last week, sponsored by Senator Lee Bright, a Republican from Sparta. Yes, I'll just read you briefly from the text of the latest Personhood Amendment. As the forces of good align themselves against the forces of darkness and evil, and try to restore the personhood of those most vulnerable, the weakest among us. The South Carolina Personhood Amendment reads, intends, I'm sorry, to, quote, provide that the privileges and immunities of citizens of South Carolina and the United States shall not be abridged, so that no person shall be deprived of life without due process of law, nor shall any person be denied equal protection of the laws. These rights shall extend to both born and pre-born persons, beginning at conception. And that's pretty much the text of the bill, and I'm a supporter, and I'm glad to see that personhood is being pursued in other states, as well as many, many locations around the country. And this article from the Christian Newswire reports that voters in the 2014 Republican primary have already approved personhood, which won in the Republican primaries by 78% of Republicans in South Carolina have said, yes, we should restore personhood to the unborn. And see, that's the difference, I think, these days between Republicans and Democrats, is that Republicans at least want to try to do the right thing. And they at least feel guilty about all the bad things that are happening. They feel bad about it. The Democrats have been taken over by full-throated abortionists. And let's talk briefly about ists. An abortionist is someone who advocates the killing of unborn children, abortion. Now, I, on the other hand, I'm a creationist, so I promote the idea that God created us, male and female, from the beginning of the creation, and indeed that God created everything. I'm a creationist, and the Democrats, they're abortionists, from Barack Obama right on down to your local county dog catcher. Well, let's just read the news of the week, and we'll find out together. Let's share. I want to share with you the news of the week. We go to the Telegraph over in the formerly Great Britain. In the United Kingdom, more children will be born out of wedlock than within marriage in 10 years' time. That's according to a new expert forecast. The prediction has been made by the Marriage Foundation, as the number of children born to married couples has continued to fall in almost all of the past 30 years, reaching an all-time low of just about half in 2012. That's right. By the way, 88% of births were within marriage just back in 1980, just a few short years ago. And in 1970, fewer than 1 in 10 children were born outside of marriage. And in the 1950s, just 1 in 20. By the way, since 1980, since this marked increase in the number of children born out of wedlock, since 1980, the number of family breakdowns, that's divorces, has surged by 44%. But on the bright side, I was wrong. There is still a little good news to come. On the bright side, nearly all births to Pakistani mothers and Indian mothers who reside in the United Kingdom, 80% of their births were within wedlock, at least there in England amongst the Pakistani and Indian community. And that's good news for the Pakistani and Indian community, especially for their kids who are going to be raised with a mother and father for the most part. And, of course, that's why I believe that Londonistan, as it's been called, Londonistan, not London anymore, but Londonistan, will be a reality within my lifetime. But anyway, I'm happy for the Pakistani kids. I'm sorry for the British kids. I guess I could just say the white kids. The white kids' families are falling apart. The Indians and the Pakistanis are keeping it together. And so we head on into Londonistan. And speaking of the state of marriage, of course, this past week, the Supreme Court here in the United States has taken up the question of legitimizing deviant, perverted marriages, including homosexual marriages. So we go into the justice file. Reuters reports that there is, quote, a sense of inevitability in the air surrounding the question of the legitimization of homosexual marriage. Justice Anthony Kennedy, Reuters reports, is the court's pivotal member, and they say he's been marching in the direction of homosexual marriage for some time, with opinions dating back to 1996. His most recent decision, or I should say opinion, in favor of the perverts dates to 2013, when he helped reject the legal definition of marriage as being limited to a man and a woman for the purposes of federal benefits. which Barry and the girls, the girl junta that run the country, they all plan for all of us to be on federal benefits by the time Barry leaves office. And I think they all want us married to homosexuals. I think that's their goal. Yes, Kennedy deplored the idea. Deplored it, he said. In his 2013 opinion, he deplored the idea that marriage was limited to a man and woman. He said that makes gay marriages unequal, and he deplores that. And so we know where the Supreme Court is headed. I think I do anyway. Reuters also reports that an element of uncertainty hovers over Chief Justice John Roberts. That's right, John Roberts, installed by George W. Bush. Perhaps the stupidest man to ever occupy the Oval Office. And I don't know why Reuters thinks there's an element of uncertainty around John Roberts. I mean, he helped, if you all remember, and maybe you don't, so I'll let you know. He helped the homosexual activists overturn Colorado's Amendment 2. Colorado's Amendment 2, back in the early 1990s, said that you don't have to bake a cake for a homosexual wedding. You don't have to make a pizza for a homosexual wedding. You don't even have to rent your rental property to a homosexual, nor do you have to hire a homosexual. And John Roberts worked pro bono to overturn Amendment 2 about 25 years ago, 20 years ago. And so we know how John Roberts is going to vote. We know how Anthony Kennedy is going to vote. I think there are only three justices who will give lip service to the idea of traditional marriage, and the other six, which is appropriate, six being the number of the beast, or at least part of the number of the beast. The other six are going to foist homosexual marriage upon those of us upon whom they think they can foist it. It will not be foisted upon me, and hopefully not upon my family. But it's going to be difficult as my children grow up to try to teach them right and wrong when the Supreme Court teaches them that wrong is right and that perversion is good. So the Supreme Court is going to make my job as a parent much more difficult over the next decade as I prepare my children to go out into the world on their own. And for that, might I say, Justice Kennedy, I deplore the United States Supreme Court, and you in particular, Mr. Kennedy, Ginsburg, Kagan. Isn't there another pervert on the... I can't think of them all. I can't name all the perverts on the court. They are the head of the proctocracy, the head of the snake. Let's go now for more news on the Supreme Court's, the arguments being heard. From the Culture File, Reuters again reporting that on the sidewalks outside the U.S. Supreme Court last week, there were clashes between protesters on both sides of the issue, the normal side and the perverted side. And I'm just going to highlight why I believe that we have already lost this war when it comes to legitimizing homosexual, deviant, adulterous fornication. They have an example of two of the protesters who were on the side of the homosexuals. And these two are Shelley and Ellen. I said Shelley and Ellen. Shelley is 74 years old and Ellen is 73, and they're a pair of lesbians, and they call themselves a couple, and they say they're actually married. They traveled to Washington, all the way from Davis, California, to stand up and give their full-throated support for deviant, adulterous fornication of the homosexual variety, to be called marriage. One of the dykes said, quote, "It's very sad that people have to hate in order to show how they feel," unquote. Yes, she was talking about the normal people, who said, among other things, homosexuality is an abomination to God, quoting God himself, as a matter of fact. But the two dykes who are, well, they could be my grandmother. Well, maybe my mother. Oh, my goodness. I am getting old. They're in their 70s, so they probably couldn't be my grandmother. But they could be my mother. And they're old enough to be grandmothers. If they weren't a pair of dykes, they might be grandmothers. One of the dykes said, "It's very sad that people have to hate. I think they should just go home and shut their mouths." Usually, when we see people like that, we just stand in front of them and start kissing. Nothing more repulsive than a pair of lesbians in their 70s slobbering all over each other, trying to make a political statement. It's just disgusting. It's disgusting. But that just tells you that the 60s generation, which this pair of dykes is a fine representative of the 60s generation, they have finally gotten what they called for as they marched through the streets, burning their bras and smoking dope in the 1960s. And they've gotten through even to the head of the snake, the head of the proctocracy at the Supreme Court. And they're well on their way to finally bringing it all down, man. It's the Weekly Worldview. I am Doug McBurney. So glad to be back with you in spite of the horrible news, frankly, from the Supreme Court. Billy Squier, is he a homo? He never had a girlfriend, and he hung out with Andy Warhol for a while. Anyway, hopefully he didn't even dabble in that. But we appreciate his contribution to the Weekly Worldview. Yes, Billy Squier currently residing in the Where Are They Now file. And we're doing all we can to help his career along. Let's go more from the Queering of America file. We'll now talk about Breitbart is reporting that another pair of lesbians up in Oregon have won a judgment of $135,000 against Sweet Cakes Bakery up in Oregon. They say that, the judge has awarded the pair of dykes $135,000 for emotional damages in a lawsuit against Aaron and Melissa Klein, who own Sweet Cakes Bakery. They are a Christian couple who declined to provide a wedding cake to the perverts back in 2013, back when you would have thought you could have got away with something like that. But no, the proctocracy is not going to allow Christians not to participate. In their lawsuit, the pair of dykes claim that they felt mentally raped as part of a list of 88 symptoms they listed of their emotional distress. 88 symptoms.
They already had those symptoms.
They had the symptoms before the case. Here's a brief list of the symptoms that the pair of dykes included in their complaint. Acute loss of confidence, doubt, excessive sleep, felt mentally raped, dirty, and shameful. High blood pressure, impaired digestion, loss of appetite, migraine, headaches, pale and sick at home after work, resumption of smoking habit,
wow.
Shock, stun, surprise, uncertainty, weight gain, and worry.
Wait, cake? Not having cake is good for that.
That's right. They didn't need the cake. They were already worried about the weight gain.
Yeah.
Just have a cigarette. The Breitbart reporter remarks that the judge apparently found it unremarkable that in the list were both loss of appetite, impaired digestion, and weight gain. The judge didn't seem to notice any of that and apparently focused on the mental rape accusation. The award that the judge has ordered the Christians to pay the deviants will reportedly bankrupt Sweet Cakes Bakery, and they will have to shut down. And the damages awarded were not limited to the sale of business assets, but would be taken out of the Christians' personal finances, their personal funds. If they sell off their business, they're not able to come up with $135,000, then the judge is going to raid their personal bank account and give the money to the queers.
Oh my God.
People have talked about a culture war. Well, now this is a shooting war. This is a culture war. The culture war really breaks out after the other side wins, and they start to overrun and rout and kill and destroy their enemies. Now we're into the pillaging part of the culture war. The Christian couple says that this is money they would otherwise use to pay their mortgage and feed their kids. Instead, it's going to be taken from them along with their business and their means, their ability to make a living will all be taken from them and given to a pair of perverts so they can buy cigarettes and, I don't know, digestion medicine. Now listen to this. Now you've seen this happen before where the deviants have been declared victors over the normal people. And the normal people stand up and they set up a GoFundMe page and all the normal people donate money and try to help their Christian brothers and sisters. And it's been very successful. I believe it was Dana Lash who set up a page that raised nearly $1 million for, I forget if it was a Christian baker, I think it was a pizza joint. Anyway, a GoFundMe page was set up in support of Sweet Cakes Bakery, but it had to be deleted since GoFundMe's terms of service do not allow fundraising for people found in violation of the law. That's what GoFundMe is claiming. Now, if I'm not mistaken, this is a civil lawsuit. This is not a criminal. There's no criminal charges here. This was a civil suit. But perhaps GoFundMe is under the impression that Christians bowing before and serving queers is now the law. And perhaps, for all intents and purposes, that's what it is. Perhaps. Perhaps that's where we are. So prepare to be pillaged. All of you normal people out there, if you don't bow, and if you don't get in line, you're about to be pillaged. And of course, the pillaging has been going on for the better part of a generation, but they just haven't been taking our money. They've been taking our children. And for that, we go to LifeSite News. Reason number 667 in Canada to get or keep your children out of the government schools. If you're not familiar with our list to get or keep your children out of the government schools, we start in every country at 666 because we assume that there are already 666 well-documented reasons to get or keep your children out of the government schools. Starting with reason number one, that the government schools teach an affirmatively godless curriculum. That's reason number one, and then there's at least 665 others. Let's go to reason number 667. A primary grade lesbian teacher from Ontario Public Schools in Canada has revealed at a workshop for teachers earlier this month how she uses her classroom to convince children as young as four to accept homosexual relationships. Yeah, she says she starts in kindergarten, and she tells a story at the workshop how one of the students called another student gay as a put-down, third grader. And so she went to the principal and asked him if she could go to all the classes in the primary school. She said, I want to go to class. I want to go class to class and talk about what gay means. And the principal immediately bowed and scraped and said, please go. Do what you must do. So she teaches children that within the safety of the classroom, they can be allowed to unpack these complex social issues and reflect on their own preconceptions of gender, sexuality. Okay, here's the thing. If I have an adult who happens to be supervising my kindergarten to third grade age child, the last thing I want them talking about is sexuality. It's completely inappropriate. In fact, it's a criminal offense, in my opinion, for an adult to be discussing sexuality with small children. And it should be obvious on its face to everyone, but the world has gone completely insane. So should I even say her name? Pam Strong is her name. Pam Strong says she even discussed her own sexuality with the kids. She told the kids, I'm married to a woman, I am gay, and I am in love with my wife. She said some of the children just, she said the first time she said this, now listen to this because this is instructive for all of you people who think that gender is something that you can just choose to assign yourself and that homophobia is something that has to be stirred up by radical right wingers and that revulsion and being repulsed by the idea of homosexuality somehow has to be ginned up by religious fundamentalists on the right. The first time she told a classroom that she was a homosexual, she says that all the children just kind of went silent. She asked, how many of you have heard that before? Not one hand went up. None of these kids had been exposed to this kind of deviance before. But she went on, and I'm not going to get into the details because it's disgusting. But she talks about how a new boy, she's been going around from class to class all school year last year, teaching kids about her deviant, perverted sexuality. She says, last fall, a new boy entered her fifth grade classroom. And one day where it was mentioned that she was a lesbian, the new boy put his hands over his mouth. And he said, oh my God, I think I'm going to puke, says a fifth grade boy, which is the natural reaction upon hearing about homosexuality. It's in your DNA to be repulsed by it, unless you go to the government school and your lesbian teacher teaches you from the youngest age that it's actually good. She celebrates the fact that by that time, her fifth grade class had been so brainwashed into deviance and perversion that when this kid said he was going to puke, all the other kids looked at him with disgust, and he could tell that they were very upset with him. And the other kids basically are telling him to get in line.
Wait,
bow down.
What's her subject?
What does she teach?
Math?
Well, it doesn't really say that she... I think she teaches LGBTQ issues, especially Q. That's questioning. And she, in fact, I think her full-time occupation, her specialty, so to speak, she's probably degreed in helping young children question their gender and their sexuality, which is something that she should be arrested for, in my opinion. She should be arrested and certainly not allowed to teach in the government schools. But there you go. If you're listening to us in Canada, there's reason number 677. I'm sorry, 667. To get or keep your children out of the government schools. another story, I'm sorry, he said to his extremely attractive audio engineer. Because my extremely attractive audio engineer, she has not suppressed that God-given, inborn revulsion. And she's having to cover her mouth right now and choke back. Because it's that bad. But more on the queering of America from Boston, Massachusetts. A Massachusetts couple say they knew their child wasn't happy. So they made a courageous and difficult decision to raise their daughter as a boy at his own request. His parents and family therapy team concluded that this four-year-old boy was actually transgendered and that's why he wasn't happy. The parents say this wasn't tomboy stuff or some other passing phase. He was showing real signs of a lot of shame and self-hatred. The boy's father, Joe, says they studied everything they could on transgendered youth. Now, the fact that you can study on transgendered youth is, well, it's very discouraging. They say they found out about the alarming suicide rate down the road for confused transgendered children, and they decided to transform their daughter, Mia, into a son, Jacob, and they decided to do it sooner rather than later. The father says, we realized how risky it is not to take action and not to allow the child to become who they feel they are. CBS reports that the parents are fully aware that they've waded into a snake pit of controversy. A snake pit. So you know who that is directed at. You know who's part of the snake pit. That's the Christians, who say that we should not mentally rape our children by confusing their sexuality and encouraging them to deny the body that God gave them. Yeah. So we're welcome to the snake pit, ladies and gentlemen. The mom says, I want to change the way society perceives and accepts transgender people because this is the society that my son will grow up in. Oh, they were asked, what if Jacob wants to transition back to a girl somewhere down the road? And the parents say, well, that's okay. This will just be a little detour that has only caused a little confusion and maybe some embarrassment. Whereas forcing an unwanted gender on a child might put them on a suicidal path. They say they've gotten overwhelming community support from everyone who's just said that they're brave and strong and courageous and trailblazing and all of that. And everyone cheers except those of us in the snake pit. Everyone else is cheering as they set their child up for a lifetime of confusion, shame, anger, self-hatred, and possibly one day, as a result of what they've done to their daughter, perhaps, yes, perhaps even suicide. I'm Doug McBurney. Appreciate your effort, boys, but we don't have a lot of time and there's an awful lot to do. Before I move on into the further documentation of the decline and fall of Western civilization, I want to take a moment to reflect on something that happened a century ago that has been virtually ignored by the Western media. The story is from Breitbart, from the War File. This spring marks the 100th anniversary of the Armenian Genocide. And, of course, American politicians, from the president on down, they have failed to recognize this anniversary. For the seventh straight year, Barry and his minions have failed. The centennial, Breitbart reports, the centennial of the genocide by radical Muslims against Christians, a story conveniently ignored by the media and forgotten by the world's governments, while they are similarly ignoring atrocities by Muslims against Christians the world over. Yet that, you know, you wouldn't hear about the atrocities of Muslims against the Christians in the Middle East if the fanatical Islamists didn't put the videos online of chopping off the heads of Christians, marching them into the sea, and brutally murdering them. Were it not for the Muslims themselves taking so much pride in what they are doing to the Christians, you would never hear a peep about it out of the Western media, because for some reason, killing Christians seems to be okay all over the world. Perhaps you don't know much about the Armenian Genocide. I didn't. I'm going to confess that right now. I did not know that much about it. I'd heard that there was a controversy, but I've never delved into it, and Breitbart does a fantastic job in one or two paragraphs of explaining what it is. They say to understand the Armenian Genocide, one must first understand the history of Turkey, which for centuries was a Christian country. Its capital, now named Istanbul by the Muslims, was originally named Constantinople for Emperor Constantine and was the most powerful Christian city on the planet for several centuries. In 1453, the city was conquered by Muslims and it became Istanbul and the capital of the Ottoman Empire. Armenia remained Christian, however, as the Ottoman Empire crumbled. Despite the fact that other territories gained their independence, Armenia, part of the Ottoman Empire, did not gain its independence. In 1876, Sultan Abdul Hamid II took over the dictatorship of the empire. Armenians began demanding reforms. In response, the Sultan gave free rein to Kurdish groups to begin targeting Armenian Christians, and eventually he unleashed the Muslim military, and some 300,000 Armenians were killed in the 1890s. But that's not the end of it. In 1908, three Islamist leaders called the Young Turks seized power over the Ottoman Empire, joined World War I on the side of the Germans, and they endorsed a policy of extermination directed against the Christians of Asia Minor. The Young Turks, who called themselves the Committee of Unity and Progress, launched a set of measures against the Armenian Christians, including a law authorizing the military and government to deport anyone they sensed was a security threat. Armenians were ordered to turn in their weapons, any weapons they owned, to authorities. Those policies of disarmament then led to wholesale slaughter as Turkish troops drove Armenians into the desert to starve. Over 1 million of them, by various reports, were driven into the desert. Children were thrown into rivers to drown. Nearly 3,000 children were installed in empty houses, and there were advertisements that any Mohammedan who wanted to take the girls or boys could apply to these homes, and a great many children were taken. Why is it important to remember the Armenian genocide right now? Well, it's the 100th anniversary of an event that even I, being a sort of a news hound and a history buff, really knew very little about. But it's important because, as Breitbart reports, just before the advent of the invasion of Poland, Hitler told his troops, "Go kill without mercy." "Who," said Hitler, "after all, speaks today of the annihilation of the Armenians?" And Hitler's troops then began World War II with the invasion of Poland. So who does speak of the genocidal Muslims today in the Middle East? Nobody. Nobody's allowed to. But we cannot ignore the mass murder that's happening right now in the Middle East. Syria, Iraq, Libya, Egypt, Iran, Lebanon, Nigeria. It's going on right now. And we should all pray every day for those who are being persecuted and killed for the name of Jesus Christ. Breitbart says to ignore the Armenian Christian genocide is to repeat it. And thus we repeat, says the reporter from Breitbart, as Christians in the Middle East die, and they are. And I suppose we're just not in a position, as Americans anymore, to be able to know that our government will stand up for minorities who are being murdered. Innocent minorities who are being murdered, especially Christians. We just don't know that anymore because our leadership in the proctocracy is officially Antichrist. In fact, let's go from that to reason number 903 to get or keep your children out of the government schools here in America. In Dublin, Georgia, a middle school teacher has been removed, forced into retirement, because she told her students that Barack Obama is not a Christian. Yeah. She told her students that he's not a Christian, so the school announced her retirement last week while simultaneously apologizing to students and parents. And here's reason number 903 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. The school administrator said, quote, in a statement, he said, quote, "It's not the place of teachers to attempt to persuade students about religious or political beliefs. The teacher was wrong." And you see, that's just not true. It is the job of teachers to persuade students about religious and political beliefs. They just act like they're not. But that's what teachers do. They don't just teach reading, writing, and arithmetic. They also teach students about right and wrong. And right and wrong involves politics and religion. And it is the job of you as a parent to be a teacher and to persuade your children about religion and politics. If you choose not to do that and you turn your children over to the government schools, they will persuade your child about religion and politics while all the time claiming that they're neutral. "We don't allow religion and politics in the government schools," they'll tell you. But that's a lie, because that's exactly what a teacher is there to do. The Board of Education there in Dublin, Georgia, has announced they're scheduling training sessions for the district's professional staff. They want to plan for greater emphasis within the curriculum on the contributions, history, and culture of diverse people groups. Diverse people groups. That's politics and religion, ladies and gentlemen. And it's humanist religion disguised as a neutral education or as a secular education. Now listen to this. This is from Atlanta Journal-Constitution is where I pulled this story down. They say the teacher's views that Barry's not a Christian, they say they follow a very familiar false narrative about Barry that has plagued him since he entered the national stage in 2004. Critics have argued that because of his unique background, that he is anti-Christian, or he's an atheist, or most commonly, that he's a secretly practicing Muslim. So that they tar all of us with this broad brush that we're all a bunch of hicks, fanatics, who think that Barry might secretly have a prayer cloth. What's it called? No, a prayer rug. I'm sorry. Yeah, we all think that Barry, he regularly assumes the bottom-up position and bows to Mecca and prays to Allah. We say as we pick our teeth with a piece of hay, our shotgun between our knees. That's how they want to paint us. But we, the normal people, the Christians, we're simply paying attention. We're awake. We're alert. And we can tell that Barry Obama is a socialist. He's an abortionist. He's a homosexualist. I did clear that up earlier about ists, right? I am a creationist. Barack Obama is a homosexualist. He is an abortionist. Oh, and by the way, he's also a bastard. Did you know that? Barack Obama is America's second bastard president. He doesn't know who his father is. And neither did Bill Clinton, by the way. Barry Ho is not a Christian. Because anyone who is a socialist, an abortionist, and a homosexualist is not a Christian by definition. If those are the position he advocates, it doesn't mean that he secretly got him a prayer rug and he's bowing to Mecca. But it does mean that he is not a Christian. And I just want to remind you again that Barack Obama is a bastard child, a child who does not know his father. And children who don't know their father generally hate their father. And they hate the authority of the position of a father. And that's what Barack Obama is. He is Antichrist because he hates the authority that has been ordained by God for the father. And it's because Barry hates his father, just like Bill Clinton hated his father. How else could they feel about a father who abandoned them and who they never really even knew? And we're going to talk in a minute, I think. Let me see here. Am I going to get to this or am I going to run out? Perhaps I need to talk about this now. Since we're talking about boys who hate their fathers, let's go to Baltimore. Everyone was shocked to hear the mayor of Baltimore say that she gave room to those who wish to destroy. She said, we gave them, those who wish to destroy, I'll quote her, quote, those who wish to destroy, we gave them space to do that as well. And everyone was shocked. I was shocked. I watched it happen. The riots in Baltimore, and this has been barely covered, and not covered at all by the mainstream media, but the riots in Baltimore started at a high school. I watched it on television live. As the students exited the high school and went and attacked the mall. They went from the high school, they organized, and they attacked the mall, and they began to rob and loot the mall until the police chased them off. At which point, they organized themselves in various parts of town and managed to outflank the police. These are high school kids, outflanking the police, robbing, looting, starting fires, assaulting people, burning cars. High school students. So Barry Ho, the Antichrist, Barry Ho in the spirit of Antichrist. Have you noticed that he and his minions and his girl junta have spent an awful lot of time over the last 6 years addressing school kids? Every time you turn around, Barry or one of the four horsewomen of the apocalypse is addressing a junior high, a high school, a junior college. I've heard other talk show hosts who talk a lot about smoking cigars and playing golf. I've heard them make fun of Barry for going and speaking always to children because they say, well, he's so wet behind the ears, he's just unqualified, and he has to talk to children. Well, I'm here to tell you people that this is a strategy. A strategy to take advantage of a generation of young people who hate their mother and father. There is a generation of children now who've been raised in the government schools, who've been abandoned, half of them approximately, at least half, have been abandoned by one or more parent, and they hate their parents and they hate authority. And Barack Obama and his team recognize the power of getting control of the youth and turning them against the established order. And that's what they're well on their way to doing. Because let's face it, folks, Freddie Gray was a dope dealer and a thief. and he's the patron saint of the Barry Ho generation. A generation led by an angry bastard who hates his father. They are coming, okay? And fortunately for you people, there is a counterweight to the bastards who don't know their fathers, who hate their mothers and fathers. And that is the generation of Christians who are homeschooling their children to be the generation that will come against the Barry Ho generation. And so if you're out there and you feel like you're alone and there's just not that many of you and all is lost, I get that way sometimes. I'm generally pessimistic about just about everything. But know that you're not alone, that there are tens of thousands, millions of us out there who have decided to go another way. We've decided to raise our children in the fear and admonition of the Lord. And hopefully they'll be able to save these bastards from themselves at some point in the not-too-distant future. All right. Now, I need to talk about Bruce Jenner. Bruce Jenner did an interview. It was a couple weeks ago. I know it's somewhat dated news. But Bruce Jenner did an interview with, I forget who, I believe it was another transgendered person. I'm not sure who it was because I didn't catch it. But it was with the soft screen and the plastic surgery. I'm just assuming he was interviewed by someone who was transgendered from ABC. We'll just leave it at that. But in the interview, he said that he's always been confused about his gender identity. He believes, he said, he has the, quote, the soul of a female, unquote. And he says his entire life has been lived as a lie. Well, let me just say that when I was 8 years old, I watched Bruce Jenner accept the gold medal for the decathlon in the 1976 Olympics. And Bruce Jenner was one of my heroes. He was one of the famous people who helped me understand masculinity. Obviously, it was my dad, number one, who's a manly man, by the way, a man's man. But Bruce Jenner was among a number of other famous people who helped me understand what it meant to be a man. What it meant to strive, to win, to compete, to fight. And now Bruce Jenner has, he's blown my mind. As a matter of fact, I was in another meeting with some doctors and nurses. And we had a chance, there was 10 or 15 minutes that we just had to kill. And we're talking. And I mentioned Bruce Jenner and I said, is it okay for anyone to say that maybe Bruce Jenner's got some kind of mental problem? Maybe he's mentally ill? And I could feel a chill in the room as I realized immediately that was the wrong thing to say in this crowd. What with the nose rings and the tattoo and whatever. So anyway, I told them that, look, I don't want to offend anyone, but Bruce Jenner was one of my heroes and he's just freaking me out, that's all. And I'm wondering, maybe is he mentally ill? And they went on between themselves to basically justify and glorify Bruce Jenner and say how brave he was and how wonderful he was. I felt rather sheepish, and I must say it was very uncomfortable because I thought any normal average person would look at that freak show on ABC and they would feel like me. They'd be like, Bruce, dude, what's up? You're losing it, man. You need to go see a doctor. Maybe you need some medication. But brother, you are in trouble. But that is not the way the average government-educated drone feels. It's just not the way they feel anymore. And boy, I felt it this past week. Bruce Jenner goes on as he was being interviewed by some transgendered person on ABC. He said he says that he wanted to be clear that sexuality is separate from gender, which is just a bizarre statement, indicating again that perhaps he's mentally deranged. He went on to say, quote, "I've always felt heterosexual. I've never been with a guy." Again, which would lead any normal person to say, okay, why are you, like, growing breasts and wearing makeup and a dress? Maybe you've got some mental problems? Anyway, he says he now considers himself asexual. Two of his former wives, two of his three ex-wives, Linda and Chris, both say they were aware of his secret, that he struggled, and that it played a part in ending their marriages. Okay, well, now that's the first normal thing I've read in the story. You find out your husband's putting on dresses and getting hormone injections. Yeah, maybe that. So, Kris Jenner, is she the most normal person in the story? Well, that right there is a bellwether of what kind of trouble we are in as Americans. I think she's Kris Kardashian now, if I'm not mistaken. Although I could be wrong about that. I get them all mixed up. And I haven't followed Bruce Jenner since like 1977. So let's see. Another revelation. Bruce Jenner says he's a Christian and a Republican. Uh-huh. So now that helping to now redefine again conservatism, defining deviancy down. Well, Bruce Jenner, he's a Republican. Well, he must be a conservative. He's for low taxes and he believes in the Constitution. The fact that he wears a dress and puts on makeup and corrupts the minds of the youth of America, that shouldn't matter. He's a conservative. In fact, maybe Sean Hannity will have him on his show in the coming weeks to do an interview as a new representative of conservatism in the LGBTQ community. Well, we'll just see about that. Let's see. Bruce said that he would sit in church and wonder how God saw him. Yeah. Okay, that's the second normal sentence. Don't we all feel like that when we sit in church and we think about our shortcomings and we wonder how God feels about them? Well, apparently Bruce's pastor or minister or ministeress or pastorette told him that just go with how you feel. God loves you no matter what. Instead of instructing him that there are boundaries that have been set by the living God. Boundaries are both spiritual and physical. They're moral, relational, and they're real. And if you're struggling with sin, that's something you need to take to God in repentance, Bruce. But that's not what Bruce learned. In fact, he says, now he thinks maybe this is my cause in life. Maybe this is why God put me on earth to deal with this issue. So if you've ever wondered what is the unforgivable sin, this is it right here. Attributing evil to God. That's the unforgivable sin. And that's why Bruce Jenner will be strapping on jet rockets and heading straight to hell upon his impending and untimely death. Yeah. He says he believes in the Constitution. He says he's had suicidal thoughts, but now he feels great. And everyone around him is telling him to feel great. You look great, you're brave. Oh, that's the thing I wanted to comment on. Not only can you not question whether or not Bruce Jenner maybe has some mental problems, you have to celebrate his bravery. That's right. And if you don't celebrate his bravery and take that mark, well, then you're going to be singled out as a bigot, part of the snake pit. Yeah. He says his children and everyone around him have all shown their support. Here's what he said at the end of the interview that I thought was very telling. As he looked over at the other transgendered interviewer, he said, "I'm going to learn a lot over the next year. 2015 is going to be quite a ride," said Bruce Jenner. And so I am of the opinion that Bruce Jenner, if he's not mentally deranged, which that's my first gut instinct, is that he's been living with these Kardashians and doing reality TV, and he's just insane. He's probably been taking a number of different prescription medications, and he's just gone insane. It's either that or he's been talked into doing a reality show and this is all just a ruse for money and attention. It's one of those two possibilities. Bruce Jenner is not a brave trailblazer. He's not to be respected. He's to be pitied, and he's to be ministered to try to pull him back from the edge. But instead, in America, conservatism has been defined down to the point where, listen to this. I got this in my inbox this morning from a loyal listener and a fan. From the Hill.com, which is the Capitol Hill newspaper. Bruce Jenner got support from an unexpected place on Saturday. Former GOP Senator Rick Santorum, America's last great conservative hope, has said of Bruce Jenner, quote, "Well, if he says he's a woman, then he's a woman," unquote, says Santorum. That's Rick Santorum. So the most hated conservative in Washington says if Bruce says he's a woman, he's a woman. So my friend Bob in Connecticut, he added an addendum to the article. He said, note to Rick Santorum, if you really think Bruce Jenner is a woman, or if you really think that deciding whether or not he should be allowed in a woman's bathroom is a tough issue. Oh, yeah, that's right. Rick Santorum went on to say he's helping us deal with a lot of tough issues like whether or not a man should be allowed in a woman's bathroom because he identifies as a woman. Well, Bob tells Rick, if you think that that's a tough issue, you aren't qualified to be dog catcher, let alone president. And Bob in Connecticut reminds Rick, just on a purely political level, by the way, Rick, if you're going after the transgender vote, that's going to win you a grand total of 0 votes, by the way. Bob in Connecticut, modern day sage, and giving us some hope that there's someone out there who hasn't completely lost his mind. The people who have not completely lost their mind listen to the Weekly Worldview. That's right. And they try to help politicians, members of the proctocracy, like Rick Santorum, to understand when they are losing their minds, which is fairly regular at this point. Now, I've run out of time. This is sad. I'm just about out of time. I have a number of... Wow. Well, I'm just going to go a little bit long. I want to go back to Baltimore quickly because I talked about how the riots started amongst the high school kids, and then they spread throughout the city, and then even after they've charged these cops with outrageous charges, ridiculous. I mean, unless the medical examiner has video of the driver of the truck where Freddie Gray was in restraints, unless the medical examiner and the prosecutor have video of the driver of that truck stopping that truck and then beating Mr. Gray to death with a ball peen hammer, unless they have that video, there is no way they can charge the driver of that van with depraved heart murder. Please. But after it was announced that the police have been charged by the way, that angry chick who announced the charges, I mean, she looks like she's been raised in a cage by Valerie Jarrett for the last 10 years. And has just been unleashed on America like a mad dog. Did you see her? With the rubber neck and the angry jumping up and pushing her chest out and barking and then thanking the youth of Baltimore for burning the city down so that she could charge these cops with a bunch of outrageous, ludicrous charges that are just unbelievable. I don't know who that lady was, but I mean, she was scary. I would not want to get in a fight with her. I mean, she looked tough and angry. She's part of the generation who've been raised on a steady diet of divorce, pornography, government school, socialism, atheism, Darwinism. And now they're grown up and they're angry. They hate their mothers and fathers. An absolute burning hatred toward authority. And now they've been unleashed on America. You saw it in Baltimore. You saw it in the announcement of those charges. And let me just talk about one of the reasons this is happening. According to a CNS News article, about 20% of American families, in about 20% of American households, nobody works. Nobody works. So you wonder, how is it that people can go out in the streets and march and burn and loot and paint their political signs and carry them? It's because they're not working. They're on welfare. Too many people don't have to work hard. And there's a reason that for the cliche that idle hands are the devil work, Devil's Workshop. The reason that that's a cliche is because it's generally true. Idle hands are the devil's workshop, and now the devil himself, in the form of Barry Obama, and I'm speaking figuratively and taking a bit of poetic license, I don't think Barack Obama is Satan incarnate, but the devil himself has now taken over those idle hands, and he's been busy with them for the past 6 years, and longer, really, for the past 40 years. They've been busy preparing the idle hands to shed the blood of the innocent. And they did some of that in Baltimore this past week. That's only going to get worse. Maybe not in Baltimore, but they'll gin up another Freddie Gray. They'll find another patron saint for the angry children to follow. And only those of us in the snake pit will be safe. Well, we hope. I don't know how many normal Christian people or business owners are considering moving into Baltimore now, but I would assume it's fewer than before this past week. I want to comment quickly on the mother who has been called Mom of the Year by Fox News. You saw this? The Baltimore mother who was caught on video dragging out her son and smacking him upside the head and dragging him away from the rioters as he was dressed in black with a mask, throwing rocks at the police. You saw this lady, right? Toya Graham is her name. Now, just like you, my first response when I watched it live on television, just like I watched the stabbing of the fire hoses, I watched that live as it occurred. When those two guys stabbed that fire hose, I said, that is going to be big, what just happened. That tells us the depth of the anger and the lawlessness and the violence that is about to be unleashed upon us. And indeed, it has been. And when I saw this mom smacking her kid in the head, my first response was, yes, finally, someone who's sane. I had to cheer for this lady, right? Didn't we all? But then upon further reflection, I had to ask myself, Mom of the Year? Wait a second. Let me sit back and analyze this. Is that where we are, that the Mom of the Year, at least according to Fox News and CNN and just about everybody else, is that where we are, that the Mom of the Year is a single welfare mother with six kids and no husband, who's a desperate failure at raising her child to be a decent human being? She's the Mom of the Year because she smacks him in the face and curses at him with a stream of vulgarity that would make a sailor blush. Now she's our Mom of the Year? Is that where we are, America? Because if that's where we are, I mean, I would prefer to just stay in the snake pit myself. I'll stay in the snake pit with the Christians, and I'm going to be hated by all you people out there. All you people who have turned your children over to the socialists, the humanists, the homosexualists, the abortionists. I'd prefer to be hated by you than to think that this is the Mom of the Year. But for America, perhaps, that's appropriate. This is their Mom of the Year. The best they can hope for. Oh, speaking of Mom of the Year, Rosie O'Donnell's getting divorced. She's now going through her second gay divorce, according to Breitbart. Yeah. Things are getting ugly. Yep. Rosie's estranged wife. Now, just reading that makes me... Rosie's estranged wife, Michelle, is asking a New York court for full custody of the pair's 2-year-old daughter. The pair. I like that. Breitbart calls them a pair. Homos aren't couples. They're just a pair or a pile, depending on how you find them. Rosie says, I can't really fix my personal life right away. She was asked about a divorce. Let's see. The well-known, trailblazing, brave gay couple, Rosie and Michelle, they split after 3 years of marriage. They've been living apart for months. They adopted a girl who they're abusing, as you can imagine. Just sad. But I feel bad for Rosie's adopted daughter, who's, I'm not even going to say her name, because maybe someday she'll be able to break out of this deviant and perverted situation that her parents have put her in. And maybe she can have a normal life sometime, so I'm not going to mention her name. I'm sad for her. Anything else? I don't know. I guess that's it, folks. You know, I'm going to leave the rest of these stories aside. I hope to be on... with Bob Enyart on Monday on the Real Radio in Denver, that small 50,000-watt blowtorch, KLT. But I thank you for joining me here, the Weekly Worldview. Forget radio. We are unconstrained by the bounds of the traditional broadcast media. We go worldwide to a worldwide audience. And I'm so glad that you took some time out of your life to hear what I have to say. Because like I said, I'm pessimistic and generally in a bad mood. And it makes me feel better to know that there's at least a few sane people out there who are listening. So thank you very much. I want to thank my extremely attractive audio engineer. She had to flee the studio at some point, I think because of all the homo stories. She fled. But I thank her, of course. I thank you for listening. Thank my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. I want to thank my pastor and my church at Denver Bible Church and American Right to Life. And should the Lord tarry, I will return. Hopefully next week. I know, I try to be here every week, but hopefully I'll be back next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.